All right, brothers and sisters and friends of the truth. Our talk this morning is entitled Signs in the Heavens. Let's turn to Luke chapter 21 and read verses 25 through 28. And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's heart failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heaven shall be shaken, and then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. There are a lot of things that are going on in the current events before us at this time. And I think they're very exciting to think about. I frequently caution myself in talking about current events, thinking that we see something and we really don't quite have a handle on what it really means yet. I think too often in Christadelphian history, something has happened momentous in the world and we have jumped to a conclusion and then found out later that it's the wrong one. For instance, during World War II, many Christadelphians, assumed that that was a sign that the beast of the earth system was about ready to be fully established. Well, not quite the way it happened. But I think that we are starting to live in a time where things are happening so rapidly in the world, not just the Middle East, in world politics and within the world, that it becomes, for me, I believe, a little easier to pinpoint what the Elohim are up to. What is the plan of the Lord? And I seem to be a little bit more confident in these days with what I think is happening. That just may mean I have longer to fall when I find out I was wrong, right? When we think we standeth, there we fall, right? But I think we're seeing a lot of things that certainly seem to fit the Scriptures very well. At the Arkansas Bible School in the spring of this year, I gave a talk on current events in which we focused on things that were happening directly in the Middle East and in Europe and what they mean. At the Bible school this summer, which this recording is here in our ecclesia this morning, is going to replace that since it didn't record there, I focused on the developments within the Tarshish nations. Now that also is going to have a reflection, of course, on things in Europe as well. But I think that we are seeing some momentous things in what the Bible terms the Tarshish powers that are encouraging and should have all of us realizing that the Lord's return is indeed any second, not any minute, not any day, not any month, any second, and that we should be constantly prepared for what comes. In Ezekiel, we have in Ezekiel chapter 38 some powers that stand up to the Gogian invader. Ezekiel refers to them as Sheba and Dedan and the lions of Tarshish and the powers thereof. Well, scripturally, I think we can see some clues as to who these Tarshish powers are. On the overhead, which might be a little bit tough for the people online to pick up from the camera. I don't know how clear that's coming through for some of them. I tried to turn some of the lights down to make it easier. We have a couple of pictures from World War I in which Britain referred to herself and all of her colonies as the lions there, and we're calling for them all to come to the battle. In Ezekiel chapter 27, we find that Tarshish was associated in biblical times with the world's trading power. Look at what is said here in Ezekiel 27. Say unto Tyrus, O thou that are situate at the entry of the sea, which art a merchant of the people for many isles, Tarshish was thy merchant. They traded in thy fairs, Jabal. I made up a new country there, didn't I? Javan, Tubal, and Meshech. They were thy merchants. The house of Tagarma traded in thy fairs. The men of Dedan were thy merchants. Many isles were the merchandise of thine hand. Syria was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of the wares of thy making. Judah and the land of Israel, they were thy merchants. They traded in thy market. Damascus was thy merchant. Dan also, and Javan thy market. Dedan was thy merchant. Arabia and all the princes of Kedar, the merchants of Sheba. And when we look specifically in Ezekiel 27, though I did not read it in that particular reading there, and you might want to look at verse 12 in Ezekiel 27, we see something that is very interesting identified there with this particular power. Ezekiel 27, verse 12, Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kind of riches, with silver, iron, tin, and lead they traded in thy fairs. Well, it's interesting to see that Ezekiel refers to Tarshish as being one who trades in tin. And when we think of Britain, what does Britain translate to? It translates to the land of tin. So there's an association that I think we can see there that the scriptures are showing to us. In Isaiah chapter 23, we've got a very important scripture, which I think we are seeing some things come before our eyes now that relate to. In Isaiah chapter 23, and I'm going to read from the overheads there. If you've got your Bible open, you'll be able to pick some of these things out. How ye ships of Tarshish, for it is laid waste. That comes from verse 1. So that there is no house, no entering in from the land of Kittim. It is revealed to them, be still, ye inhabitants of the isle. She is a mart of nations. So shall they be sorely pained at the report of Tyre. Pass ye over to Tarshish, how ye inhabitants of the isle. Is this your joyous city, whose antiquity is of ancient days? Her own feet, this comes from verse 7, her own feet shall carry her afar off to sojourn. Pass through thy land as a river, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no more strength. Isaiah 23 gives us a clue, then, that this merchant power was going to travel to other portions of the globe. Other places were going to become associated with this great merchant power. Her feet shall carry her afar off. Now, I think Christadelphians have sometimes in their envision of how the Armageddon conflict is going to take place and in how the last days are going to play out as far as monetary considerations, have thought of a civilization that is totally devastated. But pay attention to what Isaiah 23 says here. Now, let me just clarify that remark that I just said. A civilization totally devastated financially. All right? Let me clarify that remark. Obviously, things are going to be completely turned upside down in world governments. But pay attention to how Isaiah 23 talks about the wealth of this particular power. Now, some verses that are not from the overhead. Verse 14. How you ships of Tarshish, for your strength is laid waste. And it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre shall be forgotten 70 years according to the days of one king. After the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot. Now generally when we see that word harlot in Scripture, we get, a lot of negative connotations. But I think the word harlot here is being used in the sense of merchant. Okay? And trading of things that people lust after. All right? Continue reading. Take an harp, go about the city, thou harlot, that hast been forgotten. Make sweet melody, sing many songs, that thou mayest be remembered. And it shall come to pass, after the end of 70 years, that Yahweh will visit Tyre, and she shall turn to her hire, and shall commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world upon the face of the earth. And then pay attention to verse 18. And her merchandise and her hire shall be holiness to Yahweh. It shall not be treasured nor laid up, for her merchandise shall be for them that dwell before Yahweh to eat sufficiently and for durable clothing. We've had some comments recently in our daily readings in Isaiah, and we'll do so tonight or tomorrow night. I'm off my schedule and where I'm at on where we're getting in Isaiah is in my mind. You know, about the wealth of Tarshish. Think about how Isaiah talks about them still being able to bring thy sons and thy daughters from far, after the kingdom is established in its minuscule stage in Jerusalem. Think about what is said in Isaiah 60 as well as to the wealth of Tarshish there and, you know, its ability to assist in bringing materials for the building of the temple. The Tarshish power then is not destined to lose all of its wealth. It is destined to take what wealth will remain after the Armageddon conflict and provide it as holiness to the Lord. Now, Isaiah 23 talks about a time period of 70 years in which Tarshish will not be as an effective individual on the world trading market as it once was. Now, let's think about what happened to Britain. Here's a power that was the earth's merchant. Look at this slide here real quick, first of all. Actually, I never went to the slide on Isaiah 23. Here's a map that shows the migration of the trading centers throughout history, from Tyre to Cyprus to Alexandria, Carthage, Venice, Lisbon to Britain, and then we might include the United States. But you know, Britain was the world's largest merchant at one point. And then she turned her back on Israel. In 1917, she proclaimed for the establishment of the Holy Land. But then in 1947, Britain did almost everything they could to stop Jews from getting to Israel. As the Jews were trying to immigrate to Israel, Britain was stopping them. And there's those of you familiar with that history know there's many, you know, stories that are told about how they had to smuggle Jews past the British blockades. Well, look at what happened to Britain from that time on the world scene, from 1947, and let's add 17 years to that, to 2017. You know, she was diminished in her importance. But now in the year 2017, Britain is determined to return to that world stage. and I think she will. And that becomes very interesting for us to think about. So Brexit takes place last summer as far as the vote. The exiting hasn't fully happened yet. But Britain voted by a small margin to remove itself from the European Union. And as such, has set herself up to be in that position to be the mart of nations once again. Now, this is a comment which those that might listen to the talk online one day who were listening as if they were sitting in Arkansas didn't hear, but I'll add this. Theresa May just said, as we speak here in the Orlando Ecclesia just a couple of days ago to the G20 summit, we are not leaving Europe, but we are leaving the European Union. And that's been a very significant development. Look and think, brethren, about all of the things that are happening before our eyes that are diminishing the ties between Europe and the United States and Britain. We know from Ezekiel 38, we know that Europe, Gomer, we know that Russia, Gog, the land of Magog, we know those powers are destined to come against Israel. But we also know from Ezekiel 38 and from Daniel 11 that the United States and Britain, those Tarshish powers, Sheba and Dedan, are going to oppose them. Something has to happen and is happening, brethren, to put us in a position to where Europe's interests no longer lie with that of Britain and the United States. And we're seeing those things happen now. Now, this country, now, it's easy for us to start to focus on the United States because we live here. And I think sometimes we can become too preoccupied with trying to fit what's going on in our country with how it suits with things scripturally. But I think right now we have every right to look at it that way and should be looking at what takes place in the United States as having a profound impact on the shaping of world events. President Trump's first foreign visit was astounding, wasn't it? How many of y'all watched that on the news? You know, I think the day that Trump visited Saudi Arabia, I was at Brother Sid and Sandra's house. And just tremendous emotion, you know, being felt from that and what takes place in that visit. President Trump went to Saudi Arabia. He went to Israel, visited with the PLO, with Abbas while he was there, then went on to Vatican City, and then on to Belgium to visit with NATO. Think about some of the momentous things that happened during that trip. Well, first of all, how was President Trump received by the Saudi Arabians? Very well. They think of him as a great man. There was an Arab summit that took place while President Trump was in Saudi Arabia, in which he was able to say, listen, folks, it's time for you Arab partners, to rally against radical Islamism. As a result of that meeting, what took place just a couple of days after that? Saudi Arabia stood up and said, Qatar, it's time for you to stop supporting terrorism. You're on notice. They cut off political ties. What a great, momentous event. Christadelphians have spent a long time debating the role of the Arab nations. Now, those of us who have accepted the traditional Christadelphian view that Brother Thomas presented, I think, see an awful lot of confirming of what we've always believed here. The Sunni Muslim is separating itself from Shia, and those political powers are finding themselves separated to where they need to be on the world stage. Look at this billboard that it was placed in Saudi Arabia. A picture of Donald Trump and the King of Saudi Arabia, together we prevail. This is a billboard put up by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Together, we prevail. Now, it's also very important to note that an extremely important arms deal was signed worth billions at that moment and in that visit, where the United States has committed to build up Saudi Arabia's military might. Now, in return for that, there's going to be an awful lot of dollars flowing into this section of the Tarshish power. Over $100 billion. Tanks, weaponry, the training to operate some of these sophisticated technical services are being provided. Saudi Arabia knows it needs to defend itself and needs to be capable of defending itself, and sees the need to defend themselves in the near future. Where do they see that need? They are deathly concerned with Iran and with what is happening in Iraq and in Syria today. They have molded themselves together with the Tarshish powers for that purpose. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia knows for them to survive politically, the time has come for them to take a side. And this is exactly what the Scriptures have foretold us in Ezekiel chapter 38. King Adel al-Jabir proclaimed of Trump, "He is a man of strong character." Now, not everybody in this country and Europe certainly agrees with that particular statement. As I said that, there are many smiles on your faces now. But the importance is that the king of Saudi Arabia thinks he is a man of strong character. Did he mean that? I don't know. Maybe he didn't. But the fact that he said it shows us that those political ties are cementing together, so that when we think about Ezekiel 38 and what is said there, when Gog comes down, that we're going to see verse 13, Sheba and Dedan. Sheba and Dedan, that's the continent. Well, kids, it's not a continent. I just said it was, but it's not. The peninsula of Saudi Arabia, Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof shall say to Gog, "Art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey?" This is molding before us this very moment. Another momentous event took place when Trump left Saudi Arabia. He went to Israel. It was the first ever flight that took place that went from Riyadh to Jerusalem. Or was it Tel Aviv? My memory is actually a little bit sketchy now. Obviously, Tel Aviv is where they fly in internationally. I should have known that, shouldn't I? All right? First ever flight that takes place between those two countries. It's also the first time a United States president has ever, on their first foreign trip, chosen to visit Israel. Did Trump make a statement of where he sees his political alliances? He first went to Saudi Arabia, then he went to Israel. And those are powers that we know are destined joined together. How did Israel feel about Donald Trump? Jerusalem welcomes Trump, written on the poster. And then on another poster put up, I'm assuming in a park, "Trump is a friend of Zion." Did you listen to those speeches that Donald Trump made in that visit? Did you listen how he talked about his visit to Vad Yashem, to pay his respects to the Holocaust, and how he spoke of that we should never let that happen again? Did you listen to how Benjamin Netanyahu proclaimed that this was a historic visit? And then Netanyahu saying, "Your visit to Israel is truly historic. You are a friend of Israel. You know, there was so much kind words that just gushed out about them that it almost was overboard from our perspective, I think, looking. But I think what we really need to understand is how much Israel has been hurt emotionally by being abandoned by the United States for the 8 years under President Obama. And how joyful they are to see a man as president in Israel who they truly view will look out for them and act as a partner. Certainly a momentous meeting. Now, I don't have a picture that I'm going to put up here about the meeting that took place with Abbas, but after spending a lot of time with Benjamin Netanyahu, President Trump went on and visited with Abbas. It was reported in the media that there was a shouting match between the two, and then that was denied. Which do you believe? I mean, we don't know for sure, but it was a short meeting. We haven't had a lot said of it after that. There was no warm and fuzzy, "Oh, we're here for you, Abbas. We're on your side." There was none of that. I tend to believe there might have been a shouting match. And Abbas has recently come out and said in our news meeting, and this is post the Arkansas Bible School, so those listening as they listen to a tape of what they think is the Arkansas Bible School's talk, Abbas says, "I'm not going to stop the salaries going to terrorists. Those people that go into Israel and martyr themselves, I'm going to keep paying them." What an interesting turn of events then that must have happened in that meeting between Trump and Abbas. I wonder what was said that we don't know. Well, with all the media coverage that happened between the first two main stops in the grand meetings that took place, Saudi Arabia, they were there for longer than 24 hours, longer than 24 hours in Israel. The Pope spent 30 minutes with Donald Trump. Pretty interesting. Interesting in what didn't happen there. What were the great headlines that came forth from that meeting? There really weren't any. All we did was have a microphone pick up Donald Trump say to the Pope, "I won't forget what you said." And we assumed that he said, "What we need is peace." Okay, who could disagree with that? We need it. We need peace. But in this particular picture, how happy does the Pope look? I mean, is that picture classic? Now, it bears saying, in full disclosure, that he has a habit of having a really bad look on his face whenever he has his picture taken with a world leader. Was this bad timing? Could he have been smiling 2 seconds before the shutter of the camera picked and 2 seconds after? We don't know. But we know that the Tarshish powers are destined not to be politically aligned with the papal system in Rome. And we're seeing some discord that is taking place there, I think, as well. And we've got that borne out as well. The United States is not destined. Britain is not destined to follow with the scarlet-colored beast system when it rages war with the Lamb for 1 hour. And we're seeing the beginning, I think, of those political ties being ruined that traditionally existed between the U.S. and Pope over the last 25 years. Well, then after visiting with the Pope, Donald Trump went on to Belgium, where he promptly offended everybody he could in NATO. Is there any doubt, brethren, as to why the Lord chose this man to be president of the United States? There needs to be a monumental shift in the relations between Europe and the United States, and this man is helping it along. He trashed the European community for not paying their fair share. Since the Arkansas Bible School, he just this week visited Poland, which accepted him warmly, who, by the way, pays their fair share into NATO. But the large partners, how do they feel about him based on what happened? Angela Merkel doesn't like him very much. After that meeting with NATO, she said boldly in her press, "The days that Europe can count on the West are over." And I think it's interesting her choice of terminology there. She didn't say the days of counting on the United States are over, but the days of counting on the West, referring to Britain and the United States, are over. Europe is beginning to become centered on itself so that they are going to be that Gomer of Ezekiel 38. Gog, Magog, Gomer. They are accepting that their fate no longer lies, pardon me, with the United States and with Britain. Donald Trump, very famously as well, was viewed in the press as a self-centered individual. The picture on the overhead shows him pushing someone out of the way to get in the front where his picture could be taken. Now, is that what he meant to do? I don't know. Was he trying to get in the front? Often these photographs, folks, are choreographed, and people are supposed to be in certain places for them. I keep forgetting if this was a G8 or G20 this last week, G20 summit. Specific places choreographed for that photo as well, but of course Macron wanted to be, France wanted to be where he wanted to be. Donald Trump may well have just been going to his assigned spot. But this picture didn't help with the relations of how they feel about this man. Saudi Arabia, what a man of great moral character. Europe, they don't feel that way about him, do they? They think he's pig-headed, stubborn, arrogant. They don't like him. And you know what? That's important for biblical perspective, for prophecy to unfold the way it's supposed to. After the NATO summit the next week, Donald Trump promptly removed the United States from the Paris climate deal. And Europe went ballistic. They hated him for it. No matter how much Trump tried to say, listen, economically, this is a bad deal for the United States. And it's a bad deal for the environment, he tried to say. It does nothing to actually improve our environment. All it does is keep our economy down. An economist will tell you that Trump was right about that. Removing the United States from the Paris deal helps ensure the Tarshish power setting themselves financially where they need to be for having their merchandise be holiness to the Lord. The money they would have had to have paid in would have been crippling. The economy of the United States would have suffered from the Paris climate deal. While the world's largest polluters, doesn't really change anything for them. Europe, though, hated the man for it. This was another signal event pushing us in that separation. Britain and the United States being moved away from Europe. Macron, who I guess I got right, because at the spring Arkansas gathering, I said, folks, he's going to be the next president of France based on what I think this guy's character is and how he's going to be one that will become more European-centered, and he was elected. He put out an appeal to the United States very quickly in which he begged the American people to do what they could to change the pulling out of this deal. The Vatican, interestingly enough, said that Trump's decision was going to be a disaster. Kind of makes you think that the picture that we had up earlier that was taken of Donald Trump and of the Pope was right on in how he felt about him. And then Theresa May was accused of cowardice over her response to the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Accords. Out of all the European leaders, she would not denounce Donald Trump's decision. She made it clear that they would stay in the accord themselves, but she would not denounce the decision. Brothers and sisters, we know that in order for the image of Nebuchadnezzar to stand, that one world dominion that includes Europe and Gomer, Gog and Magog and those Germanic peoples, Russia of the land of Tubal and Meshech, to be joined together and to come down and to take over the Middle East, there has to be a division from the United States and Britain. And it's taking place before our eyes. It's also very interesting that the scriptures describe for us that Tarshish and Sheba and Dedan are not going to be effective at standing up against the Gogian invasion. Ezekiel 38:13 is very clear in what it says, art thou come to take a spoil? Art thou come to take a prey? But Gog is successful. Look at the language of Daniel chapter 11, brethren. Daniel 11, verse 40. At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Now, we have long thought, and I still maintain that the hymn of this verse is the same hymn of verse 36, which was the Constantinople in power. Therefore, the verse is telling us, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push against Turkey, which they did in 1917 and continued in 1947 to do so, in drying up Turkish influence in Palestine. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Still not completely fulfilled, but it's very interesting, brethren. And as I spoke about at the spring gathering in Arkansas, Russia is, at this moment, in the ancient territory of the king of the north. Not all of it, but he is in the territory of the king of the north, an important first step. He will come like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, and many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. That italics countries, I think, should be taken out there, because verse 41 at this point in the first up to the colon is referring to Israel. He shall enter into the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. So when Gog, the king of the north, first comes into the land, those Jordanian powers escape, Daniel tells us. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So he will go down through Israel into Egypt, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. Historically, this has never happened. I know Christadelphians try to say it has, but historically, the Ethiopians never, ever, 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 ever have been allied with any northern power against Israel. They were always allied with the Spanish during the times that the Turks were pushing into Israel. So those Christadelphians who are teaching that what we're reading here in Daniel 11 was fulfilled in 1917, from 1417 to 1917, have failed to understand that Ethiopia was always allied with Spain during those times and never came against Israel. But look at what is happening today. Libya is joining together with Russia. Made a comment at the spring gathering in Arkansas, keep an eye on Libya. Mustafa is going to start to prevail because he's got Russian help. Since the Arkansas Bible School, he has finally stabilized the country. The Russian influence is helping there. He took over a large portion of the country. He has all those oil reserves now. Verse 44 says, but tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Now I choose to read Daniel here chronologically. And I believe that I'm correct in doing so. We see then Russia, the king of the north, coming through Turkey, through Israel, into Egypt. Then tidings out of the east and out of the north trouble him. The current political environment in the Middle East, I think, is setting up the engagement for those tidings. We still have the United States battling in northern Syria with forces now. We have a Saudi Arabian country which is going to be bolstered militarily through this $100 billion weapons deal. But what is the response of these tidings? It is that he will go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many and plant his tabernacle. These tidings don't bother him. He defeats them. Brother Thomas and Brother Mansfield disagree on this verse. Brother Mansfield has always believed that the tidings out of the east are the saints. But if you read carefully in Exposition of Daniel and in Eureka, Brother Thomas always thought the tidings out of the east and out of the north related to the Tarshish powers. And I think we're seeing that take place. But brethren, how is it that the most mighty military power on the face of the earth, as we arrogantly suppose, as being residents of the United States, but we know that's not our hope, it's the kingdom of God. How is it that the U.S. is not going to be able to compete? We're destined to see things start to change so that militarily there's no competition. Now, I don't know if this report is completely accurate that appeared on Debco, but I thought it was highly interesting. It has been reported that Russia has developed and has tested a supersonic cruise missile, that flies six times the speed of sound, twice as fast as any weapon developed by the United States Navy. If this report from Debco is true and this scramjet technology has been developed, Putin has within his power to take out any fleet he wants to. There's supposedly no defense. Now, we know that this country might have something to defend that we don't know about. So there needs to be a lot of caveats to what I'm saying here. There needs to be a lot of, there's things we don't know. I don't even know that this story is true, but there hasn't been a denial from it from any media that it has appeared in, that it appears Russia now has the capability to take out an aircraft carrier if they so desire at any time. The range of the missile is such that it would require pulling the United States fleet so far away from the Persian Gulf as to minimize the impact of the U.S. Fighting Air Force that comes off that aircraft in wartime. There is still ability to refuel to get jets there. But if you cannot take that aircraft carrier and just deploy its force into the Middle East and all of its immense firepower, how much easier is it for GOG to invade into the land? I think there's going to be other developments that take place as well that will be very, very important. Lastly, I think that there's one thing that's very critical that is taking place politically now in Britain and in the United States that has a tremendous impact on shaping the upcoming Armageddon conflict. Theresa May in Britain thought, oh, I'm going to call for a special election. And I'm going to solidify all of my power. And I'm going to get the mandate to do whatever I need to do. What happened? Whoa, she barely hung on. The hand of the Almighty thought differently. The Manchester terror attacks were probably solely responsible for turning the polls upside down, whereas she was heading for a large victory. All of a sudden, she had to form a coalition government, which she has now done. But look at what takes place in Britain politically because of this. Like our country, 50% of the population really doesn't support her. 50% does. When you have a country in such a political situation as that, it becomes very difficult to do anything of consequence. And I suggest we are seeing things happen within all of the Tarsus influence powers between Britain and the United States that are making it difficult for those world leaders to do what they normally would want to do and allowing for Europe to move off on its own and to do what it needs to do. Is it any accident that this country has been preoccupied to ad nauseum with a Russian investigation into the election of 2016? Something that on its surface may appear to have no meaning whatsoever to how the scriptures are playing things out. Think about this, brethren. Think about this. During the campaigning of the presidential election, how often did Donald Trump say, it would be a great thing if we had a great relationship with Russia? Oh, Putin and I are going to get along great. The deity had other things in mind. I suggest to you that the result of the continuous drumming in the media of a supposed collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government to fix the election has forced Putin and Trump to never become friends. It has forced Donald Trump to make sure that he does everything to politically appear not to be working with the Russians. How can you have a great meeting with President Putin and say, oh, we're gonna work all of this out, when the media thinks that you're in cahoots with him anyway? This world is destined to see a Russian and European coalition and a Britain and United States and Saudi Arabian coalition. Things are moving in that direction. The Elohim have it in their control to change the grandest plans that could come to pass. And even what is happening in this country is working to that end. A divided country. Political alliances. Politics is more a verboten subject than ever before. But it paralyzes us from doing what we could have done as a country. And note that when I say we, I'm saying just because we live here. We don't consider ourselves citizens of this country. Don't misunderstand my language. We know a day is coming when the mountain of the Lord will be established in Jerusalem, and all nations will come unto it. But we know also, and it's prophesied, we know it's a surety, that there's one power on earth that will still remain in favor when that kingdom is established. Let's look at Psalm 72:11. Very important scripture. Psalm 72 is a millennial psalm. We see here in verse 11, after talking about the glory of the dominion of the kingdom, verse 10 and 11 tells us, "The kings of Tarshish and of the isles shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Yea, all kings shall fall down before him. All nations shall serve him." Isaiah 60 in verse 9. "Surely the isles shall wait for me, in the ships of Tarshish first, to bring thy sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of Yahweh thy God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee." Politically, brethren, these powers are being placed in positions to where all they can do is work on their economy. All they can do is strengthen ties with the Sunni Muslims. Europe, there's no progress to be made there, and it's only going to be more so, I think, as we see go on. But think of what is to come. The kingdom is going to be established. We are going to see this nation, and we don't say this because we're supposed to be prideful of this nation, because we're not. But isn't it remarkable how prophecy is being fulfilled? The economy is taking off in this country again. It's growing again. Maybe not by leaps and bounds that we had during the 80s, but it is growing. Wealth is beginning to flow. It will make it so there will be silver and gold, as well as thy sons to bring from far. It will be so that they can offer gifts unto the King of Israel. Let's enter into